Okay, here we go. Stand by.
3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
I think we all need some encouragement and assurance right now. And I also know there are a lot of people who are maybe listening into this show, or maybe sort of, you know, peeking through the windows, or maybe just going through a kind of crisis with all this isolation going on. They're feeling increasingly alone, especially as they navigate questions and doubts. And this show is especially for you if you are that person or if you know someone like this. I'm speaking here with psychologist Dr. Daryl Ray. He is author of Sex and God and The God Virus, and also Gail Jordan, who is the executive director of Recovering from Religion. This organization exists to help you during a difficult time, and I want to explore how and why they do what they do and what advice they might have for us as people worldwide are feeling perhaps more alone than they've ever felt in their entire lives. Daryl Ray, Gail Jordan, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So it's a weird time. Everybody's behind the terrarium glass these days. I've never experienced anything like this in my life. I'm sure you would agree, right? This is a unique situation we're in.
It's hard to even find something to compare it to. We have no grounds for comparison, so we are all flying by the proverbial seat of our pants, I guess.
I was talking to Natalie, and it's a social experiment, isn't it? How do people act and react when they're not able to connect in meaningful ways, personally, physically, with others? You forget how often just a hand on the shoulder or a handshake or a hug or just being in the same physical space with loved ones, hell, with coworkers, you know, with whoever. We take that for granted, huh?
And I feel a great empathy for people who are single, living alone with nobody to touch. That's it's got to be difficult. And I can't wait, Seth. I can't wait to see some of the research that's coming out of this. I'm positive there's social psychology researchers all over the planet just licking at their chops to get at the data for what we're experiencing right now.
Well, and I hope everyone is kind of self-reflecting and doing that research on themselves. I'm learning a whole lot about myself and what I need and what I'm missing, surprising things about what I'm missing and things I'm for which I'm grateful and things that are worrying me. What's, you know, in the forefront of my mind anyway. It is an experiment, to say the least. It's just the thing, I guess, that's so unsettling is you don't know the final chapter of the book. You don't know how we get out of this, so to speak. If we knew that, if we thought, okay, well, July is going to get here and it's all going to, you know, it's something. And there seems to be, that's the insecurity piece that I think troubles me the most.
What we're talking about today is something that we've spoken about in the past. I think it has a new urgency now, though, with the isolation people feel. Many people are where I was a dozen or so years ago, challenging cherished beliefs, once assumed beliefs, or they were indoctrinated, or maybe they were just wrong about what they believed, whether it's philosophically, religiously, or otherwise. And so they have this moment of crisis, and yet it's harder. It's so much harder, it seems, to reach out. They have a compounded feeling of being alone and without help. And that's why we're talking today. Do either one of you or both want to speak to that feeling of isolation and what recovering from religion is doing to perhaps help these people?
I'd love for Daryl to answer that. We have our hands full, but he is certainly leading the way because of his background, not only as a former minister, but as a psychologist, in helping us understand the physiology of what's going on our brains, but also the emotional part, and all of that layered into the process of questioning and doubting and perhaps even separating. So I'm going to let Daryl field that one.
Well, we saw this, well, when we saw it coming and the board of Recovering from Religion and leaders and all, we saw this coming and thought we better do something because there's going to be a lot of trauma coming out of this and a lot of upset and isolation, just all the things you've already named. So what we're seeing, and we have already seen it quite a bit, just like on our chat line and our phone call-in line, is people are saying, I'm feeling very lonely and isolated. I used to have a religion. I used to have a congregation of people I could talk to. And even now, even if I did have the congregation, I can't go back to that. I can't go get hugged by somebody. So we're seeing a lot of isolation and feelings of despair, even depression, and we're getting people calling in and talking to us about that. But we decided to get ahead of the game if we possibly could, and we've been starting to offer some online programming that kind of combines the issues of leaving a religion with the issues of isolation and psychological problems that come with all that. And the fact that your old community is not available, and maybe you don't have a new community yet either. So we're trying to hit this on several different fronts, and Gail should not undersell herself. She's doing a massive amount of work to make this happen. We're doing some online courses, webinars, if you will, that are only available to our people. Not that we don't care for everybody else, but we just don't have enough bandwidth to do the whole planet right now. So we're getting some pretty well-attended webinars every Monday night within our system. And we're talking about what's the psychological problems that people need to anticipate. And here's one thing I've been telling, Seth, I've been telling people is, let's be aware that this could last 4 months, maybe longer. And let's get our head around that so we're not surprised. Because I think the biggest problem of a lot of people faces the uncertainty. And there is uncertainty. But if you think this thing's going to be over in a month, you're going to be sorely disappointed. And then we got to start all over again with some mental health issues. And I just want to get ahead of that, so to speak.
Gail, what are some of the conversations you've been having out there?
Well, they're what you would predict, but because they have this added component of this isolation, there's a phenomenon that I noticed well before the whole coronavirus issue. When people begin to doubt and they remove themselves, they stop attending church and they remove themselves from the environment, it's almost like they're, and you know this phenomenon, it's almost like they're coming out of a stupor. When they're out of the culture and they're out of the saturation of the language and the praising and the Sundays and the Sunday school and the community that reinforces over and over again, when they finally take the step to remove themselves from it, it's almost like they can see clearly. You know, it's an indoctrination thing. And so what's happening now is that people are forced to do that, and we're having people that were not on the doubting path before. And now that they've created some separation and they're trying to make sense of this global pandemic with the whole, all of the questions that people doubt about a benevolent God, what's going on with all that. So those two things are leading people, I think, they're accelerating their questioning and their doubting. And so at Recovering from Religion, we're trying to be prepared for that. We're kind of in a ready stance as they come to us with those questions. Remember that our helpline is all peer support. It is not therapy. It's not professional therapy. We do have that with the Secular Therapy Project. But the helpline and the chat and the telephone hotline and then the online community where the clients come in and can talk to each other, all of those things exist to help someone ask their own questions. We don't try to deconvert and we don't encourage them, oh, take the next step, you're almost there. It's simply providing resources. It's giving them a safe place to be able to express their doubts and vent their frustrations and ask their questions and maybe provide, here's a book, here's a website, here's a podcast that you might listen to help answer your questions. But we have that now on steroids, so to speak, because the entire country, the entire globe is faced with these doubts and fears and questions. And so we find ourselves adapting by the moment. Our trained agents who are committed volunteers to Recovering from Religion have risen to the need. I am so proud and so impressed by these folks who are giving of their time to be able to help. And now questions are coming from out of the blue that we weren't expecting. And, oh, I haven't ever heard that question before. And our volunteers are adapting and answering and helping and encouraging all along the way.
Let's talk a little bit about your personal stories. First of all, Gail, I profiled your story on video on YouTube, so I'm going to go back for just a second and recap for those who didn't see it. You mentioned that Daryl was a minister. I don't know that that was on my radar. Is that correct, Daryl? You were a minister?
Well, Gail exaggerated just a little bit there. I actually got my degrees at a seminary. I graduated with the intent of being a minister. I never went as far as to actually... I did preach for about 10 years as a substitute preacher.
That totally counts, Daryl.
I can picture him behind the podium. The stuff that would come out of his mouth, I can't imagine it being all that pure and holy. I just don't see it, Daryl.
Here's the thing, and you'll find this amusing. I do have the singular distinction, having basically substitute ministered, preached for like 10 years, that of having never been asked to preach twice in the same congregation.
Yeah, Daryl's up there. He's like that meme on the internet. It's like, y'all motherfuckers need Jesus. You know, that's kind of how he would throw it up.
They never asked me to come back. Not one church ever wanted me to come back and preach again. So I guess I was a failed substitute preacher.
It's
even
funny.
So
you're a little bit like, I mean, you're not quite like Bart Ehrman, but a lot of people have that story where they went to seminary, and when seminary wasn't just a love letter to the Gospels, but they actually were doing analysis of the scriptures, it became for them the first time they had really challenged, I mean, how does this work and how do the gears fit together and this is not jiving. Was seminary ever challenging in that way for you, or did your moment of epiphany come much, much later? What?
I don't know. I think it was always kind of a liberal Christian. So I got in seminary. I went to a very liberal Methodist seminary in Nashville, Tennessee, of all places. And I'll bet a third to a half of all the students were gay and out about it. So that's how liberal this seminary was. And this was 1972.
And they were teaching the Bible there? Like, did they read the Bible or what? You
know? I avoided all those courses if I could. I don't know. They did. But Gail's story is much more interesting than mine. I'm just telling all you. Right. You've got a good story.
Gail Jordan, you came out of were you the homeschool mom, like hair in a bun, I don't go outside without my husband's permission kind of thing?
It's pretty painful. It wasn't maybe quite that degree, but it was definitely denim jumpers and casseroles. And so, and we were there every time the doors were open. And, you know, I claim as my credibility that I had my children there every time the doors were open. You wouldn't do that if you were not vested in it, if you were not completely sold on it. So, yes, I was all in. We thought we were... I guess I would call us conservative and not fundamentalist, but, you know, on the right side, on the right wing side of it. But, the whole thing.
So you come to that point where you didn't have at the time really anybody you could dial up, or you can't chat with them on the internet, right? RFR wasn't around providing the resource, but you're That's having right. those conversations, that oh shit moment. Oh, what have I done? What do I believe? What happens if the entire foundation of my life goes away? Will I lose everything? I mean, I know I'm putting words in your mouth. You tell me. Tell me about that moment, would you?
And Seth, that's what drives us at Recovering From Religion. So many of us, not exclusively, but so many of us who volunteer at Recovering From Religion do so because we've tread that path. We've had that moment, and at like you, it was kind of early or pre-internet almost, and so I had to do my research at the library, and I was so isolated in my religious community. I was in the South. Everybody I knew in my small town was, if they didn't go to my church, they certainly went to a church. I could claim that I didn't know another non-believer. And so when you have that panic in that moment, what we do at Recovering From Religion is try to go back there and draw on that. And we think, okay, what can we offer? How can we help? Okay, someone to talk to, maybe on the phone. All right, well, let's add an internet chat. And so our programs have developed that way so that we never get too far away from that moment of, as you described it so well, Seth, of, oh my God, everything changes if I'm wrong about this, what I value and how I live my life and what I believe and what I want to do going forward. Everything changes, and that is both terrifying, it's liberating, and that's awesome. But if we don't recognize that there's a moment of absolute terror when you find out about that, you lose this eternal parent that you've always had, approving or disapproving, someone who had a plan for your life. And that is initially, it's a loss, it's grief, and yet it's accompanied by this tremendous scent of freedom that's to come, to be able to choose what you value and choose how you want to live your life, and all of those options that are open to us after we let go of all of the restriction and all of the overlord and all of the tiny little narrow path that it is okay to be in religion. And so we try not to ever get too far away from that or recovering from religion so that we can respond, because that happens over and over and over and over again in the lives of the people who reach out to us.
So let's say I was having that moment yesterday. I pick up the phone. I call you guys. Do I have to tell you who I am? Do you trace my number? You know, am I on caller ID? Am I in a database? Do I have to worry about my identity? Because a lot of these folks I know are totally under the radar, right? What happens?
What a wonderful question. When they dial in, they can call 1-84-I-DOUBT-IT. That's seriously our telephone numbers. They call that. They have complete anonymity. They can use an identifier of a first name if they choose to. It comes into our system, and our agents are trained. We're not trying to determine that. We're not trying to get your information for any kind of a newsletter or anything like that. You are free to give us as much information as possible. We have that with our telephone. We have that with our internet chat. We can identify an area of the country when the internet chat comes in, but that's as broad as it gets. As we have the conversation, if you do want to join our online community, the only option we have to do that is via an email. We encourage people, if you're timid about that, create an email account just to get this link to join our online community. And we do encourage safety. We have a special protocol for dealing with Muslim majority countries for folks that reach out to us. And since we've opened up with the internet and we're open to those countries, we have to be very cautious, and we are very cautious in how we deal with that. But we encourage our folks that it's to their pace and to their comfort level. Daryl mentioned that we're doing some online support groups within our online community. We had one just this last Monday night. And as we have them come into our virtual room, we give them elaborate instructions on whether they want to use a screen name or simply not use their camera. If they want to turn their camera off or never turn it on, they can do that. There were some folks at our meeting that never said a word, they never asked a question, and they never turned on their camera, and that's perfectly fine. That's okay, because we, once again, so many of us know what that feels like, and we understand needing to be discreet about what the circumstances are that these people are coming from, a spouse or a work partner or a child or a parent or any number of things that you're not ready yet. And we don't want to push anybody to do that before they're ready to come out or to be visible or any of those things. That's not what we're about. We're about you doing that at your own pace. We want to empower you to understand and help you in your own process.
We have people on a chat line that leave us instantly, and they come back a few minutes later or an hour later or the next day and say, I had to leave real quick because my dad walked in the room or my wife walked in the room or something like that.
I mean, how do you guys do that? Is it like a Zoom thing or Skype, or do you have your own setup? People will ask, so.
Yeah, we're on Slack, but it to the client outside, it doesn't matter. They can just dial 1-8-84-I-DOUBT-IT. And oh, by the way, Gail didn't tell you that just this week we added direct phone numbers, free phone numbers for people in the United Kingdom and Australia, and we will be adding other countries soon as well.
That's interesting that she'd mention for the ex-Muslim or the doubting Muslim, when you have apostasy with a death penalty in 13 countries in the United States, it adds a whole new layer to, do I want to give my identity as I explore my doubts, right, Daryl? I mean, some of these people, it is literally life and death.
Yeah, and we have protocols, as Gail mentioned. For example, we insist on them using a VPN so that they can hide their identity when they're talking to us. We don't want anybody to get, you know, in super bad trouble because they just talk to us. I mean, that in the West, we don't have any problems asking those kind of questions. We don't get put in jail. We may get disowned by our family, but we don't get put in jail. We don't get threatened lashes. We don't get threatened with our head cut off. So we understand the dangers that some of the people are going against if they talk to us.
So the internet has been a kind of lifeline. I've been doing it here. We did a live stream. I was just reading selections from various books and short stories just to pass the time to connect with the community. We've got the podcast, and people are doing their online parties of different shapes and stripes. And, you know, people are adapting using this technology. RFR, Recovering From Religion, is also using this technology to try to break through the wall or allow people to break out of their isolation chambers. And I'd like to, without betraying any confidences, kind of, can you tell me some of the things you're hearing from people when they reach out to you, something that our audience can relate to?
We had a person, college student from South Africa just last week, texted in and had a long chat with one of our agents. The problem was his college was closing down because of the coronavirus, and he has to go home, and now he has to live with his religious family that he was hoping that he was gone with forever, because he was in college, you know? Now he has to go back and live with them, and he's not sure how long the college will stay closed, and he's an atheist. He's an atheist at college, but he can't go home and tell his evangelical fundamentalist parents that he is.
I had somebody call the show once. Their parents actually were blackmailing them financially. Like, if you bring any atheism into our house, we'll cut off your college funding. Meaning they were holding his future hostage unless he believed as they do. It's an emotional and financial blackmail, isn't it?
I bet we get that a dozen times a month in our chats.
And the good thing, what we want to say about that is, we're so sensitive to that particular scenario, the scenario where a young person is dependent upon parents, religious parents, for their education, and we really want these folks to get their education. So what we encourage them to do, and of course they're free to make their own decisions, what we encourage them to do is use us as an outlet. After they talk to us on the chat, on the internet chat, or on the telephone line, and we bring them into what we call our online community, Seth, they self-select that they want to belong to. It could be LGBT, it could be ex-Mormon, it could be former military, wherever you're part of the spectrum, and you can join as many as you would like. And in there, that's where they have the shared language and they have the shared experiences. Those of us who are in admin at RFR, of course, are in those channels, we call them, and we can monitor those conversations and drop in an occasional resource. I know not very much about the Mormon faith. I've read about it, and I know some things about it. In the Mormon channel or the ex-Mormon channel, they're having the best time conversing with each other and unpacking specific theology about this and that and the other. And of course, I don't know any of it, but they know all of it. And finding the camaraderie and the support and the release within those specific communities, we hope that people who are in situations, whether it's a child and a parent, or whether it's a spouse, or whatever the circumstances are that leads a person to be restricted for a while in coming out and being fully free of that dogma, we hope they can use us as an outlet while they process it. And so we can encourage them, yes, think it through, and yes, read this book, and yes, see this resource, and yes, the next step might be there's a group that meets in your town in normal times that you could get together and learn. And so we'd like to consider that almost, we think of RFR as a portal into this place where you can express your doubts and fears, but we also like to think of our community as a portal out too, that it'll send you out into the what we're going to call the secular universe, where you can begin to rebuild your life with new friendships and a new support community. And It's a trying time to try to do that, but we want to keep that always as our focus, that we don't, as much as we want to support people, and they can stay with us for years if that's what they choose to do, but if and when they're ready, we want to be able to launch them into this new life that those of us who are fortunate enough to have experienced that enjoy immensely with this freedom from the dogma and the indoctrination.
It's an interesting angle, isn't it? When you tell somebody, I'm better now. Like, would you ever want to go back, right? Would you take that pill and go back into the matrix? And I think to myself, I'm so much happier and freer. And it's not always easier, but it's just better.
It is better. I use the expression, there is so much more light and air and space on this side. And for me, things make sense. And I know that's almost a contradiction in terms, because there's a lot I don't understand about science. I don't have a science background. And yet, if you compare that to embracing the natural world as it is, with all of these questions that we don't have answered, to this other system where you never know if you're making him mad and that's a result of something bad you did, or that some other kind of judgment's going to come down on you, that's where the insecurity is. That's where the restriction and the fear is. It's freedom on this side to go, wow, this is what a virus is, and this is what a virus does. And it's not because I was a bad person. It's not because somebody else is a bad person. It's because this is what a virus does.
No, and it's not because God is punishing us for endorsing gays or gay marriage or any of that type of stuff, you know.
Right, right. And I think that's incredibly freeing.
Dr. Daryl Ray, I'm sorry, go ahead, brother. Yeah.
Well, I was going to add on to what Gail said, because she mentioned the word virus, and I just can't help but help myself.
Right, you've authored the book, The God Virus. And people talk about that sucker, because it is an infection of ideas, a bad idea, and it is passed on like a virus. So, I don't know, take it from there, Daryl.
Absolutely is. Absolutely. And I've been touting it. I've been pushing it, because I tell you, it is just like a case study, Seth. I couldn't have written the book any different. I wouldn't write the book any different today than and yet I've got a case study across the entire globe. And what we're seeing is ministers doing crazy stuff, like meeting in the middle of this and probably infecting hundreds and thousands of other people because they wanted to propagate their God virus. And of course, I write extensively in the book about how biological viruses and God viruses work together to infect people. And that's what we're seeing right in front of us today. Every one of these religions, from Mormonism, the Mormons are fasting and praying, even as they're moving together, you know, having meetings together. One of our Mormon members of our community, ex-Mormon, put a graph up, and it showed that the more the Mormons pray, the higher the coronavirus infection gets. So
I saw Kenneth Copeland, you know, the scam evangelist, and he's spitting at the television camera saying, "I spit you away, coronavirus," whatever, you know. By the way, send me your— I don't mean to derail too much, but you know, I saw an exponential graph that showed Trump's day of prayer, and then you see the coronavirus cases just skyrocket in the weeks afterward, and you think, well, either prayer works or it doesn't. And these are some of the questions that people have when they're going through that journey, right? Jesus said, if you're a Christian, Jesus said, whatever you ask in my name, I will do, that the Father is glorified in the Son. So I ask for safety, protection, and I see people getting sick, and there's death, and there's confusion about the future, and there's all this stuff, and no sign from on high. You have a video on the website, Daryl, about emotional safety. And we've talked a lot about physical safety, if I can use a Gail Jordan word. People are sequestering, right? They are isolating for personal and familial and community safety. But let's talk about emotional safety. What are you talking about, Dr. Ray?
Well, I want people to realize that in the next few months, they're going to be exposed to new feelings, new ideas, new experiences they've not probably experienced before, just like what you and Gail said right from the very beginning. And so we need to prepare ourselves emotionally as well as physically. We know to wear a mask. We know to wear gloves. We know to use hand sanitizer, wash your face, wash your hands, that sort of stuff. But very few people are talking about what are the emotional consequences of long-term isolation. And we do know if you put somebody in solitary confinement in a prison long enough, and it doesn't take very long, they will start showing signs of mental derangement, if you will. They'll become more and less in touch with reality. So I want to help people prepare their minds for what we're coming up for and take precautions. And there's a lot of things that I advise in that video, that we can do. And one of the main things I mentioned earlier is let's just prepare ourselves for— this isn't short term, this is long term. So let's get our minds around that. And then let's start doing things and I call this get out of your mind. Because what we do when we're in our mind is we start perseverating and going over and over again all the horrible things that could or might happen, most of which will never happen. But if you can get out of your mind, if you can look outside and say, who can I help? Who can I give some, donate some money to? Where can I go out? And Gail and I both done this on video. We've gone out and collected trash in the in the ditches in front of our house. I can't believe how much trash is out there. And almost all my neighbors are Christians, so it's Christians that are trashing my neighborhood.
What would Jesus do? You know, I just... It's interesting. So, we are... Human beings are, with a few exceptions, we are really kind of evolved to be communal creatures, to connect, to share life. And this increased feeling of isolation probably adds to the helplessness that you're hearing when people contact you via the website, on the phone, via the chat. Are you hearing echoes of that? I mean, people are starting to really bang their heads against the wall and they're really feeling a desperation.
Yes, we are hearing a lot of that. It's getting more, I think. Here's the deal, though. We can choose where we want to go with this. And that's partly what we're trying to do, is we're trying to say, look, there's alternatives. We may not be able to reach out and hug each other, but we can still talk to each other. And that's the beauty of the technology that we've got. The main thing is what we want to do is teach people, and we come from religion, we want to teach people resilience strategies. And one of those is to make sure that you're getting out of your mind by doing things like getting out and getting some sunshine, by exercising every day, by meditating several times a week, doing something that keeps you from going inside of your mind and creating all these horrible scenarios, that most of which will never happen.
I call those what-ifing yourself to death. I think I heard a psychologist talk about the difference between reflecting and ruminating, right? If you're ruminating, you can really spin yourself into oblivion.
Daryl even calls it, in our support group session, he calls it awfulizing. You think of the worst case scenario and you sort of obsess over that. You can't let it go, because that's the way our minds protect us, is to try to be aware of dangers on our horizon, or whatever the evolutionary psychology that goes along with that is, to be aware and to be as alert to dangers. And so we do this crazy thing in our head where, and as I said, Daryl's term was awfulizing, which I thought was a perfect way to describe it.
I like to use the metaphor that we have been pulled out of our comfort zone here, and we've been dropped in the middle of the Amazonian forest. And if that was true, if you really had been just dropped into a whole new environment like that, what would you do? You would be so focused on your environment, looking around, thinking. Your brain would have to start solving all sorts of new problems you've never experienced before. And that's where we're at right now. We're in a totally new environment, and our minds and brains are trying to solve the problem of how do we live in this new world, this new environment.
Just as a tag onto that, as Daryl said, your mind is trying to process it. I learned something in our support group this week that Daryl shared with us, which is, because this is such a foreign environment to us and we're trying to figure out what this looks like, how do we get our groceries and how are we going to manage this? And he said that if one of the symptoms of our stress at this time is bad dreams or restless sleep, it might be because your mind is in overdrive trying to solve the problem, trying to figure out all these things that, how are we going to get food and how are we going to manage and what I'm going to do when my salary dries up, and all of these things that will make your mind go into overdrive. And if you're having bad dreams or restless sleep, then it's explained and you can go, okay, I recognize that's what that is. It may or may not help you deal with it, but it's just one more thing to understand about how our mind works when we're in a crisis like this.
So you throw in the theological or even existential crisis on top of the physical crisis we're in, and some people really do need you guys. Is the phone number, is the chat, are they 24/7? How do they work? How do people reach out?
Everything is found is at our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. But in addition to that, our telephone number is 1-84-I-DOUBT-IT. So that you can grab your phone, pick it up, 1-84-I-DOUBT-IT. Everything else will come through recoveringfromreligion.org. If you'll bounce onto that page, it will ask you, do you want to have a chat with someone? Do you want to make a phone call? Do you want to schedule a call back? Maybe it's more convenient for you to have a call back scheduled. Do you want to see if there's a local group in your area? While right now they're not meeting in person, they're meeting virtually. So click on the map and let's see if we have a group in your area. Everything is at the landing page of recoveringfromreligion.org.
Let me take a short break. More with Dr. Daryl Ray and Gail Jordan from recoveringfromreligion.org. We'll continue right after this. It's a really good time to commit ourselves to learning new things. And there is a wonderful app that's my secret weapon for doing so. It's called Blinkist. On your phone, your tablet, your web browser, Blinkist takes the best key takeaways from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down to about 15-minute blinks, meaning you can digest the main points of a book on a walk, on a drive, a workout, whatever. Blinkist is awesome. I can't tell you how often even a walk around the neighborhood with Linus has given me time to enjoy a book that I once thought I didn't have time to read. Check out Jamie Metzl's book. It's called Hacking Darwin, fascinating look at how humankind is impacting its own development with technology, genetic science. Jared Diamond's got a relevant book called Upheaval, Turning Points for Nations in Crisis. Gets into history stories about national troubles and how those nations overcame them. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Seth. Try it free for 7 days and get 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/Seth to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/Seth. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're maintaining. I hope you're coping. Hope you're dealing. And to help us deal is a wonderful organization called Recovering From Religion. And I have two people who are movers, shakers with the organization who are really making a difference, Gail Jordan and Dr. Daryl Ray. I hear birds in the background. Are you out picking up trash in the yard there, Daryl Ray? I mean, are you out picking up your Christian neighbor's trash?
Well, you've been to my house. I think, have you been to Gail's house?
Never, but I've seen your beautiful, I call it like a ranch. I don't know what you call it. You've got the land, the pond.
I actually call it Freethought Farm, yes.
Freethought Farm.
Well, So it's a fabulous place to hunker down. It's got all the usual spring chores of a home, you know, the garden and the grass and all that, but also with the animals, the donkeys and the goats and the chickens and the whole thing. So it has kept me distracted and entertained.
I have been interested to watch people pull together. You know, it's funny. There was someone who had started, somebody's child had started weeks ago, painting rainbows and taping them in the windows so that people who walked or drove by would have their day brightened. And so they started it in our neighborhood. So when I walk Linus around the block, look, there's a rainbow. There's another rainbow. It sounds so corny when I say it out loud, but honestly, it's lovely. It's just a lovely sentiment. People are finding creative ways to remind each other, hey, I haven't gone anywhere. We're all in this together. I love you or I miss you. And I don't know, have you seen any examples of stuff like that? Have you seen people sort of compensating and getting creative with connecting?
I have. I hope, and Daryl talked about, you know, psychologists and sociologists waiting in the wings to kind of assess this period after it's passed. But I hope people are taking pictures and remembering this time, even those with small children. I'm like Daryl. This is going to be long term, but this will pass. Time will pass and we will get to a different version of this, whatever the new normal may look like. And we don't want to miss the lessons and we don't want to miss the opportunity. So I hope people on the individual level. And Seth, I just loved your posts about the rainbows and finding the rainbows. I'm out in the country, and so I don't get to participate in that part of it. But I have enjoyed you posting that, and I hope other people will reflect on that. So much of what Daryl shared with us as we do our support groups is, here's what is happening on a physiological level in our minds, but here's some suggestions about how we can help people facilitate managing that and coping with it and integrating some stress management techniques. And I hope everybody reflects on that, because there are some positive takeaways from this. We're learning things about ourselves. We're learning things about what we value. We're learning things about our community. Let's not miss the positive takeaways that we can all. I don't want to sound too Pollyanna, because this is an extremely challenging time, and I recognize this, particularly for folks whose incomes have been affected and who are concerned about their loved ones and their health and all of the very big, heavy issues. But in spite of all that, try to be tuned in and be intentional about this little fraction of a moment in time where we can learn and we can do better.
I saw there was a child down the street who had, they'd taken chalk on the sidewalk and made a hopscotch, and each one had like a positive message. You know, it'll be okay. Oh. We'll get through this. Skip twice. Do this. Hop once. Jumping jacks. You're beautiful. You know, it was just a lovely gesture that had been sort of painted there in color and chalk by a child. I'm sorry, Daryl, did you have something?
Yeah, I think that's great. We should learn from kids. Here's what I have two things. One of it, I think I want us to thrive. We've got 3-4 months of this, so we can sit around and twiddle our thumbs and, oh, poor pitiful me. Or we can think, how can I thrive? How can I grow? How can I start a new exercise program? How can I start a new hobby? How can I develop relationships that over the phone, or maintain relationships? And there's all sorts of things that we can do. I've been reading books again that I haven't read in 30 years. I thought I should go back and reread those books. I've thought of that for years. And now's an opportunity to go back and reread some of those books that I loved so well back then. The second thing is something in psychology we call future pacing. And that is, go out in 5 years from now and look back in your mind. Go out 5 years from now and think, what did I learn from that time, from the big 2020 coronavirus crisis? What did I learn from that? Or go out 20 years and say, what do I want to tell my grandkids about the great 2020 coronavirus crisis? And I think that helps you put things in perspective, so that you think, I want to learn from this. I don't want to just vegetate. I want to be a human being that's growing and learning. And I think that's an attitude that will only help you. It cannot hurt you in this time and place.
Final question about recovering from religion. I'm not even sure how to ask this, but you know, someone's in a journey, they're going through doubt and all these types of things. I mean, do they need to be sort of at the wall going through apostasy or that process, or can they be fully religious with just questions? I mean, is there a criteria? I don't want people to disqualify themselves because they're like, oh, I'm not right for this phone number, you know, that kind of deal. So can someone speak to that?
Oh, I think it's as varied as there are personalities, and there is absolutely no criteria. We talk about the belief spectrum, and people come to us for whom the very, very first little tiny pings of doubt are starting to intrude in their thoughts. People come to us who have considered themselves an atheist for years, and some event happens and they all of a sudden they need to process it, and they need just a little support, and they need to talk to someone, and everywhere in between. As we have repeatedly said, we don't try to deconvert folks. When folks come to us and they say, this is my question, this virus thing has got me rattled, where is God in all of this? We're not going to go, yeah, right, there's no God. We don't do anything like that. We say, what do you think about that? And tell me what your beliefs are. And what would you like to be able to express? Are there any other things that you're doubting about that? It is absolutely each individual person's journey. We so respect that. We want to empower that. We want to encourage them to develop their critical thinking skills, and wherever that takes them. Sometimes, and we have had folks that have visited the helpline and they've shared with us these doubts and questions, and maybe later they come back and they've gotten farther into their faith. You know what? If that's where their thoughts have led them, and that's where they are on this journey, that's fine. And we're glad that we could help you with whatever your issue was at the time. If they need to continue and they need a little more support. Maybe they come into our community. Maybe we direct them to the Secular Therapy Project because maybe they need more than peer support because of the issues with which they're dealing. So there is zero criteria for being able to come to us. And my statement about that, Seth, and my encouragement is give us a shot. Give us a shot. Come ask a question, make the phone call, chat with us a little bit. Just visit the website. We have a vast resources tab that our resource team works on daily to try to find and procure new resources and make sure that they're vetted and that they'll be helpful. And so come visit the website. Maybe that will be enough for you. But there is no, there's no question that's too dumb. There's no question that's too small. Whatever it is, and you think that that recovering from religion might have the answer for you, please give us a try. Reach out to us. And on the other side of that, let me give my last little encouragement to folks, to our blessed and beloved humanists that are out in the community that have found themselves shut down. They can't do their after-school tutoring or their community building or whatever it is they find in their regular real life space lives. If they would like to be a part of helping, of paying it forward, so to speak, of, we call it armchair activism. Recovering from religion is a fabulous place to do that. You can do it from the comfort of your desk. You can do it. We don't have shifts. You're not required to do this many hours or take this many phone calls. We're all a team. We work behind the scenes together. We would love to have you join our team. And there's a volunteer tab at recoveringfromreligion.org as well as our donate tab. And if they want to be a part of what it is that we're building here with Recovering From Religion, we welcome that with open arms.
We've got about 130, 140 volunteers, and they're all over the planet. We are now, we've got volunteers, two in Germany, one in the Netherlands, one in five in the United Kingdom, I think, and several in Australia. I mean, it's I think we're covering something like 14 time zones now. Wow. So we're 24 hours. Our volunteers are volunteers. We don't always have one ready to answer the phone. But if you don't get an answer, you don't get a chat line agent or a phone answer, call back or schedule something, and we'll be glad to help you if we can.
I'm thinking about a specific moment when I was going on my journey, you know, that moment of doubt. Oh, I wish I would have had your phone number. I wish you would have been around is a better way to say. Like, I can, at that moment, right? I mean, I'm sitting there going, what's going to happen to my life? I'm so messed up. Everything's falling apart. Who am I going to lose? What am I going to lose? Who am I? What do I think about the world and all? Because I began to realize then if I don't hold to a biblical worldview, I have to re-examine everything else. Like all the other dominoes are falling. And if only I could have just like reached out and just talked anonymously to somebody and been like, holy shit, this is where I am. And I don't know what to think. And so I take this personally. I take RFR personally. I take you two personally. Everybody, I adore these two people. They are my family. I'm hugging you guys through Skype right now, even though I can't do it personally.
I can feel it.
And I will we'll get the word out. You are not alone, right? You're not alone. And this is a wonderful resource at recoveringfromreligion.org. Dr. Daryl Ray, Gail Jordan, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you, Seth.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions. Log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.